to admit that without the clones, it would not have been a victory.
Victory? Victory, you say? Master Obi-Wan, not victory. The shroud of the dark side has fallen. Begun, the Clone War has.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Last Missions. This is a Friends of the Force and Doing Talking crossover series about Star Wars The Clone Wars on Disney+. I am your first host, Brad.
And I'm your other host, Madison.
And we are here today to talk about the third episode in the final season of The Clone Wars, episode 3, On the Wings of Kiridax. And this was directed by Bosco Ng, written by Brent Freeman and Matt Mikhnovets. So we are here to discuss all that and more. Action-packed episode, definitely a joyride of sorts. And Madison, I'm excited to dive into this continuing conflict, this continuing war in a galaxy far, far away that keeps infiltrating different cultures that just want to remain neutral and don't want to fight, but they're forced into it, and it makes me emotional.
They just want to live their lives. And the Techno Union has to ruin everything.
Leave the politics alone,
please.
But Madison, how are you doing on this Sunday of daylight savings? I know we were talking a little bit about it before we recorded, but we're both struggling with the hour of lost sleep.
The struggle is real, but you know what? We'll get through it.
Yeah. No, we're trying, folks. That's what tea and coffee and caffeine are for. So it's all the above are being consumed at this current time. So this episode was a lot of fun. I gotta say up front, Bosco Ng, so he is like one of my favorite animated directors on Star Wars animation. He's done episodes across the Clone Wars and Rebels and Resistance. Resistance specifically, like the engineer with the episode between Niku and the other Nikto that he meets. Rebuilding the Resistance is another one he did. Rendezvous Point with when we first meet Tora Doza's mom. So all these great episodes that he has done in the past, he's very good at getting people emotional. I think this is a less emotional episode in terms of intricacies of character relationships and more about the action and the realities of war. So it still hit me in some way, seeing especially some of the Poltecs die and some different camera angles that they showed. And it's just like the kind of savagery of the Techno Union on this village was pretty tough to watch at certain points.
Yeah, the Clone Wars has never been one to shy away from showing the horrors of war and showing really sad death scenes, always. this episode brought the feels, not as much as last episode, because this episode was much more action-driven. But still, I'd say my only complaint about this episode is that it was too short.
Yeah, it was like 18 minutes.
Yeah, I clicked on it and I was like, 18 minutes? No. It was so much fun, though. Like, I just really loved seeing Anakin and the clones really work together well to escape in this episode. And there were lots of great moments where different members of the Bad Batch got to shine and we got to see their own, like, individual skills, like Wrecker with his strength throwing everyone up into the ventilation shaft, which was really funny. And Tech with his gadgets, of course. I loved how he like thought ahead to record. You know what? I don't even know if it's thinking ahead. It's just him being a geek and like recording everything. And he just, you know, thought these creatures were cool. I'll record their noise. And then it ends up saving their lives later. I thought that was kind of funny in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this episode was so action packed and there were so many close calls that were like making me really nervous the entire time because, again, I'm completely like unspoiled for how this arc turns out. So like constantly nervous for every member of the Bad Batch. I'm like, please don't let any of them die.
I totally agree. I got worried at a couple points. I thought at one point Wrecker was going to die for some reason. And I
was
like,
too.
Do not kill my boy. I will riot in the streets of San Francisco outside Lucasfilm. They'll be like, no, bring back Wrecker. Come on.
Yeah, it was like when Anakin went up there and he was like, what are you doing, Wrecker? And Wrecker was like throwing the explosives out and Anakin barely lifts him out of there in time. I was like cringing going, oh my gosh, hurry up.
I was like, his cockiness is going to get the best of him at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, this episode definitely brought some feels, but not all of the feels. And I think what this episode did really well, again, is just kind of show us the sort of trope that we're used to in Star Wars, The Clone Wars, that we've seen many times before of a village gets brought into conflict and village has to side with the Jedi and the Republic, and then they have to fight together. And then they win, and then the side that joined will always welcome the Jedi moving forward. So it was a very familiar episode. That's why it's not necessarily, it's probably my least favorite one so far, but I think rankings don't really matter. I enjoy every one of these episodes completely. And watching it Friday morning was just a boatload of fun with all the action, all of the knives from Hunter, all of the ridiculousness of Wrecker throwing people around. And it was just a good time. You know, it was a good serial moment. Or a serial episode to wake up to and watch before work.
You know, as a huge Lord of the Rings fan, when Wrecker kept throwing people, I was nobody tosses a dwarf.
Oh my god! I'm so glad you brought this up. I had the same exact thought. Not the beard.
Yeah, I especially thought of it the second time when they were in the middle of the battle at the end, and Rex was like, "No, not again, not again, no." It was so funny.
Yeah. Oh, so good. And I love the fact that Anakin was just like, you're not going to toss me, Wrecker. And then he walks a couple steps and force jumps up.
Oh my gosh. Anakin's Gimli, because he's like, nobody tosses a Jedi.
It's like, I got this one.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the villager theme, you know, the nature versus the machine. It's like you said, a very prominent theme in Star Wars. And it's very consistent, you know, usually how it goes down. They always end up winning, but they suffer some losses along the way. There's usually the trope of, like, they're the people who really live off the land. They're not trampling it. They live in this kind of symbiosis or balance, you know, instead of exploiting the resources like the industrial complex that is in the area always does. But like you brought up, I kind of want to talk about this a little bit because we were talking before we started recording that it's like, it's interesting that these people are always just endlessly grateful for the Jedi coming in and saving them. But it's also like, usually the Jedi did kind of bring the war to them in a way. Like, usually it's the arrival of the Jedi is followed very soon after by this horrible attack from the Separatists. And the native populace never seems to like have any resentment or bitterness towards the Jedi. It's always just like, yeah, you're welcome back anytime. And I kind of raised my eyebrows at that this time because I was like, a lot of them died, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I would like to see more nuance with that in the future of like, some people are happy and grateful and others are kind of like, yeah, you ruined everything, like whether they're right or not. I think that would be interesting to see in the future more.
Yeah, it's interesting that they seem to be living a pretty peaceful life. They weren't really being threatened or attacked before the Jedi arrived to grab Echo. And it wasn't until they were almost forced to choose. Rex tells them, the Techno Union claims it's neutral, but they have chosen sides. Now your people have to choose. So they're almost at that point not giving them an option. Because what are they going to say? No. Then the Jedi are just going to leave and then the Politex will be left to the destruction of the Techno Union. So they kind of have to side. They don't really actually have an option. They don't have a choice, in my opinion. But that's kind of the reality of war. Sometimes you get dragged into the conflict when it might not be the best thing for your people, but because of the losses that could happen. But then it also is like more... it's more of a surefire way towards victory. So it's kind of a push and pull, a catch 22 almost.
I think it felt a little different to me in this arc because like I'm thinking about, for instance, the Lerman, which I think that was probably season two of the Clone Wars, mm-hmm. where they were the lemur people, if anyone doesn't remember, who were like pacifist and they didn't want to fight the Separatists, but the Separatists gave them no choice. They were going to raise their entire village. The Jedi are able to help them help themselves and fight off the threat. There's another episode where, oh, I can't remember the name of the species, but they're like the turtle people. And Hondo and his pirates keep raiding their village. And Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka show up and they help them fight off Hondo and his pirates. That felt like very immediate in that, like, they're already being attacked and they're already being raided and the Jedi show up and help. And it's not like the Jedi brought the fight to them. I think that's why this arc felt a little different to me. Because, like, we didn't see the Techno Union actively attacking or pillaging the village of the Politex. So it, like, it felt a bit more in this arc like they were kind of being dragged into something that they weren't already kind of being forced into. Mm-hmm. The threat probably would have come eventually, but it just wasn't. It wasn't already there, kind of like we've seen in the other arcs so far.
And that's the other tough thing, too, for the Jedi, because, yes, there is no direct threat necessarily, but I think long term maybe it helps the Politex for them to like expect the fight to happen. You can't live mm-hmm. isolated forever, especially in this type of war. Like, it all comes at some point. And that, it makes me think too of the sequel trilogy timeline with the First Order and something like the Black Spire book, where Vi Marati is going to this very peaceful planet and everybody doesn't really want her there because Batuu is so isolated and so close-knit, and there are certain people that run the town, that it's like, mm-hmm. why are you here? You're just going to bring the First Order and disrupt our peace and our routines. And that's something that she has to kind of fight through to get allies, is, hey, like, this war is going to show up on your doorstep eventually, whether you like it or not. And that's mm-hmm. just a reality of war. It spreads, and it's like a disease almost. And even if you sit by idly and wait for it to end, at some point it affects you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the tragedy of this whole thing. Because at the end it's very ominous about what's going to happen next with Wat Tambor, because he says they need to recoup their investment. Which I don't know what that means.
I have a theory about what it means, Brad.
Yeah. What's your theory?
So, okay, we're gonna jump in and talk about Echo here. I think what they mean is that they are talking about Echo and they've hijacked him somehow, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. we know that all clones have a chip in their brains that, you know, for instance, when Order 66 happens, they have no choice but to comply. And I think the Techno Union might have kind of programmed Echo at this point to where he would be kind of their slave and would do whatever they ask. So I think that it's probably going to happen like, either Echo spies on them from the inside, or maybe he's even like triggered in a way to like try to assassinate someone. That's like where my brain's going with like how this is going to turn out. And it makes me sad because I feel like Echo's going to die again. And, you know, because it's like we all grieved him years ago and we got over it. Now it's like he's back and we're happy, but now we're probably going to have to grieve him again.
Huh. I'm so done with grieving. No more grievances.
Right.
I think it's spot on, because this thing, the music was very ominous at the end, especially when Rex is like, it'll just be like old times. And Echo's like, yeah, just like old times. And he kind of gives that look of
that like really evil look.
Yeah, which like, I don't know if he's in the know of what's going on. It kind of at one point seemed like it, with a little bit of a glint in his eye, but mm-hmm. it might just be the way it was framed. He might be totally oblivious, and maybe he himself doesn't know the exact details, but he might be doubtful that this is going to last.
Going back and watching it the second time, I sort of felt like he was playing them the whole time. I could be totally wrong. And it's kind of like they could have flipped the switch, like after Wat Tambor and all of them had that conversation, they could have flipped the switch. And that's when the conversation happened of like just old times. But like watching it the second time, it felt like, you know what? I'm going to make a weird parallel here. So I just rewatched the Duel of the Droids arc where R2 goes missing and Anakin gets a replacement droid who's like purposefully sabotaging everything, and they don't find out until the end of the arc. I sort of felt like that was what Echo was doing. Like, he takes them up this ventilation shaft, and then they have to go across this like really precarious pipeline, and it's like there was no way out of that situation except for this random, like, out of the box plan that Tech was able to come up with. They would have gotten captured. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if he was intentionally sabotaging their escape efforts or not, but it's possible.
It is possible. I think I may be leaning more on the side of I think he is in control, but I do see there. I did have the kind of same thought where I'm like, okay, he happens to lead them to this one area on this really very, very scary, like, heights area, and they all almost fall off and get trapped and, like, basically killed. And if it weren't for Tech to have the recording of those creatures, what would they have done? You know?
Yeah.
It's curious. But I'm really not ready for what's to come with Echo in the next episode. And the next episode's called Unfinished Business.
Oh, gosh.
So I don't know what the heck that means, but it sounds not great. And again, we haven't seen any of the unfinished arcs. We are going into this fresh, so we don't know what happens. So yeah. Out there, though, somebody does know. People do know.
I mean, that's one of the big questions that I have is, like, is he going to be totally controlled by the Techno Union? And he's actually good, like the good Echo is still in there. He just has no choice anymore. Or is he bitter and angry about Rex leaving him behind and he feels betrayed and he actually chooses to in turn betray him now? I'm just like, that's one of my big questions that I have is, like, does Echo have any choice in this? Is he choosing to do it? Or is it just something that he has no control over?
Do you think Order 66 could come into play at all in terms of, like, Echo's knowledge? Because he brings up the fact that he has access to all of the Techno Union database, including, like, plans, inventory, building schematics. I know Order 66 is more of a secret Kaminoan thing, but do you think there's any chance that he could, like, access some remote part of his memory that he's only able to because of how he's wired now, and that, like, that could play another role? Like how it did
maybe
with the Fives arc?
It's possible that he could access that himself, but I definitely don't think the Techno Union knows about Order 66, because, like, it's one of those things where I feel like Sidious knows and, like, only a select few know, like, primarily Dooku and maybe Maul, because he was privy to the plan years ago. Because even, like, the other Separatist leaders don't know, because Anakin shows up on Mustafar and just slaughters them all, and they had, like, no idea what was going on. Sidious just moved them to Mustafar, and they're like, why? Like, Newt Gunray doesn't know, so, like, the Trade Federation doesn't know. Wat Tambor's there, the Techno Union doesn't know. So I feel like it's a plan that only a very few select elite few know.
It's interesting you bring up the Mustafar scene now, because I'm thinking of the parallel with this episode, because Wat Tambor is on, like, the other side of the door trying to kill Anakin and his group inside,
man.
And he's, like, slowly approaching the door on his Segway, because he's rolling across the floor at, like, 10 miles an hour.
I totally didn't think about that.
But then the last person Anakin kills in Revenge of the Sith is Wat Tambor, when he does the infamous head turn towards the camera with the glowing orange eyes, and you see Wat Tambor in the background, like, oh shit.
He's, like, hiding behind the table.
Yeah, he's, like, cowering behind the chair. He's like, oh god, please don't.
He's, like, peeking over the edge, like, oh no.
He's like, listen, Anakin, if this is about that, like, purple electric thing I sent after you, like, 3 weeks ago, just please forget about it, okay?
I'm
like,
sorry.
We're good. Like, we can be friends now, okay? I'll give you, I'll resurrect Echo, I'll help you out.
Anakin's going, this is about that time on Skyco Minor.
That's Anakin's unfinished business. This is where the fun begins.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god. Anakin's farewell tour. I'm not prepared for whatever is to come with Echo. I know it's just going to hurt, because Star Wars is tragedy, and that's that. So we just have to come and deal with it.
Yeah, it's not even like a thesis statement anymore that Star Wars is tragedy. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's like our modern day Shakespeare, you know? It's like always, there's always something you least expect, and it hurts. But hopefully at the end of the day, we can take something from it to learn. And I think there are things to learn in this episode. Speaking of which, this episode's fortune cookie, Madison, at the very front of the episode is titled "Survival is One Step on the Path to Living."
Yes.
So what did you think in terms of this quote and kind of what it means in the larger scope of this episode and maybe the larger scope of Star Wars?
So I kind of looked at it in two ways. One was more literal and simple in that, like, throughout this episode, our heroes keep having to overcome one obstacle after another, and they're just trying to get from point A to point B and survive because they're up against very tough odds. They keep triumphing over one thing, and then they have to figure out how to solve the next problem. Very much like the journey of life, the hero's journey, overcoming trials, living to fight another day. But I then thought about it in terms of Echo, because like we all thought he was dead, right? But then we find out he's survived and we're happy. But it's like, how much has he actually survived? Is he really living? Because I'm going to pull out the modern phrase. There's a difference between surviving and thriving. You know, Echo's not thriving at this point. There's obviously something very, very wrong. And I wonder, like, to what extent, like we were talking about earlier, has he been corrupted? And it's like, yes, Echo is still with us, but how much is he still with us, if that makes sense? Mm-hmm. I think those questions are going to be answered next episode.
Kind of makes me think of Frodo Baggins, you know?
Oh my gosh.
To bring up another Lord of the Rings
reference.
Speaking
of the pain train.
I guess spoilers for the Lord of the Rings if you haven't already seen it. Which, what are you doing? Go watch it. It's the best trilogy of all time. Coming
Agreed.
From somebody whose life is Star Wars, the Lord of the Rings trilogy is just, like, perfect.
It's superior.
Yeah. In the Lord of the Rings, obviously Frodo goes through this whole journey, but when he comes back, he's not the same person he was before. So even though he survives the journey, is he actually living at that point? Which is mm-hmm. why he makes a decision to go into the West. So it's just an interesting concept, you know, just because you survive, it says here it's only one step on the path to living, but there's still so much more involved in that living. Like, you can't. War changes you sometimes for the worse, and no matter how desperately you try to move on with your life, there are after effects that can linger. And we even see that with, you know, modern day war in our own world, with, you know, soldiers coming home and having post-traumatic stress disorder, and dealing with that it's a really tough transition. So for me I think of this in the context of Rex, because we know he's going to make it through, right? We know he's going to survive Order 66. He's not going to carry out those orders, but is he going to be living after that happens? Is he really going to be able to lead a normal life until we eventually see him in Star Wars Rebels? Because when we see him in Star Wars Rebels, he seems to be doing pretty okay for himself, but I got to imagine the actual journey towards that point is really, really difficult. Thinking about how all of your fellow brothers turned on your leaders, and how you are like the only one that can see through what happened, and you also yeah. are separated from the one Jedi that probably means the most to you in Ahsoka. It's kind of tragic, and it makes me think of when Rex was told by Commander Cody in the very first episode of this season, The Bad Batch. He says, sometimes in war, it's hard to be the one that survives. So bad enough, it's hard to be the one that survives, but once you actually survive, can you live? Can you lead a true life?
Yeah, I think we're going to have kind of a compare and contrast situation going on, where we see how the war affects two different clones, and that Rex does get to go on. And even though it's hard and he suffers along the way, he does end up coming out on the other side of it living. You know, he still, at the time of Rebels, does have some of his brothers with him, and he finds a new cause with the Rebellion and teams up with our heroes in that show. And he seems to have finally kind of moved on as much as you can from something like that at that point, and kind of incorporated it all into himself and become a whole person. Whereas Echo, I don't think is going to get to have that. I think we're going to get the tragic comparison of, like, those who can't escape the effects that the war has had on them, because there are stories of tragedy and there are stories of triumph. And I think we're going to have that comparison between Rex and Echo over the course of this arc. And then over the, you know, seeing Rex's arc as a whole, like not just in these four episodes, but from Clone Wars to Rebels.
It's pretty incredible that he is such a central character, you know, throughout mm-hmm. those two animated shows. And I like this arc in particular because of the focus on Rex's relationships with his fellow soldiers. I think that's what's making this stretch of four episodes unique. It's very human. It doesn't show him as just like a perfect leader that, you know, kind of can win every battle. It's like what happens when you might actually lose the battle, not just mm-hmm. in terms of the actual battle itself, but like an internal battle, like your mental health and your emotional state over like losing somebody that you thought you could bring back and also redeem your own mistakes in the process. And then you fail once again. And what's that going to look like? It's not going to be an easy journey for him, especially with what's to come.
Yeah, I think it's really important to show Rex's struggle because a common misconception about storytelling is that like, oh, gritty, darker endings are better. They're more like realistic or whatever. I don't subscribe to that way of thinking, but that's a lot of people think that way, unfortunately, where they're like, oh, a happy ending is too cliche or whatever. But it's like, you know what? Sacrificing yourself is hard, but it's even harder to keep living. And that's what we're seeing with Rex is like so many of his brothers have sacrificed themselves over the course of the war, which of course is very heroic and moving, but it's also equally as hard, if not harder, to keep on living after all of that has happened and mm-hmm. after you've seen all of that hardship. And I think we need more stories like that in Star Wars where a character who has seen this kind of hardship, they don't end their arc by having to sacrifice themselves and die, but actually getting to live and move on and keep contributing to worthy causes down the line. I think we need more stories like that.
Absolutely, I agree. I think that's perfectly said and can be applied to many characters recently in the Star Wars universe. So,
yes.
Madison, the first version of this episode actually had the title card, "In War, There Is No Such Thing as Neutrality." So I gotta ask, do you like the change of this title card better? Because I know they've changed every single one so far from the previous unfinished version. But mm-hmm. I personally like the newer one better. I feel like the "There Is No Such Thing as Neutrality" is kind of bland and doesn't really mm-hmm. say much, where I think the "Survival is One Step on the Path to Living" is a bit more nuanced and a bit requires a bit more thinking and analysis, which I feel like that's the point of these. It should really force us to think.
Yeah, I mean, the neutrality thing is pretty clearly presented in the episode, but the question of survival and living is a lot more under the surface, and you have to think about it a lot more, like you said. And it's more character-focused instead of, like war-focused, if that makes sense. Instead of, like, thinking about sides and stuff, it's more focused on our characters and what they're going through. So, yeah, I like the new one better.
Wait, Madison, are you telling me the Star War isn't about war?
Oh man, Star Wars isn't pro-war.
Wait,
oh,
what?
Oh my gosh. What? My whole world has been shaken.
Wow. All right, folks, that's it for this episode. I'm going to go cry myself to sleep at 2:30.
Star peace?
Oh my god. Well, speaking of war, this episode, as we said before, was more focused on the action of it all. And once the war was actually brought to the Politex, it was quite entertaining, despite the fact that there were some really sad shots. I know there was the one kind of like from the ground looking up shot of a Politex being shot by the, or being killed by one of the droids. And that was a little brutal. And you see their leader.
That hurt.
Obviously, yeah, it brought back those vibes from Return of the Jedi when the one Ewok gets killed. I still can't get over when that happens.
Oh no, that still hurts.
Yeah, always hurts. Justice for that Ewok, honestly. With this episode, it was interesting to see their leader who like wants to join the fight, and then throughout the whole battle, he's almost pretty much like cowering away behind certain covered areas because I don't think he truly realized what was happening or what this was going to bring. I have mm-hmm. to say the big the big round things, the Ookt, the Octuptara Magna Tridroids. Wow, that's a mouthful. You don't want to write that one down multiple times on the chalkboard.
10 points to Gryffindor.
Yes.
gave me some War of the World vibes, honestly. I completely thought of that while I was watching this. If you've seen the 2005 War of the Worlds film, which is obviously based off the H.G. Wells book, but it kind of gave me those vibes of like these just giant creatures who stand so tall over a group of villagers and are just destroying everything. And I thought that was a pretty on-the-nose parallel. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the way that the camera was shot and that these droids are designed for this episode specifically being so large, I think that was on purpose, and mm-hmm. I think it was a very obvious reference, but that's just me. But the Bad Batch really shined in this one, especially Wrecker. I mean, besides the fact that when they're over that giant, just open area outside, he's like, uh-oh, I looked, oh God, and he's just trying not to fall off. And then he eventually is just tossing people around, you know, on top of these Magna droid, tri-droids. And like Hunter with his knife, like it's just so great. It was such great action. I loved every second of it.
I really, really, I said this last episode too, but I really relate to Wrecker and his fear of heights like so much.
Yeah. You know, they always say never bring a knife to a gunfight, but I don't think that applies to Hunter. Would you agree?
I completely agree. Yeah. Hunter's like, rules? What rules? I don't need guns. Bring my knives.
The knives are out.
Oh, and we get more of Anakin being extra, as he always is, showing off, taking down one of those huge gas bag headed things on his own. And yes, that was a Skytalker's reference.
Yeah, what did you think of Anakin's extraness? Because clearly Echo is like, you haven't changed at all. He's like, nope, I haven't. And then he just does a huge sweeping somersault off a cliff onto this droid and then jumps off and force pushes it away like a champ.
Honestly, the whole battle, I was going, where is Anakin? Where is Anakin? Because they were just getting destroyed. And I was like, literally, they're all about to die right now. What is Anakin doing? Oh, he's just chilling on a cliff up here, not doing anything.
Oh, gosh.
I was like, what are you doing? And then it worked out because he had the high ground.
Ooh. Seems he forgets about that in a couple weeks, how valuable that can be.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then he kind of took down both of those things. It was pretty impressive with the assistance of the Bad Batch. I loved that whole sequence. It was really fun.
Who do you think would win in a knife fight? Din Djarin or Hunter?
Ooh. If Din Djarin has Baby Yoda for motivation, like if Baby Yoda's in trouble, Din Djarin is going to win.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I could see. Yeah. I think Din Djarin's a little more gritty. Although I don't know, it could be a very entertaining fight. Like I would pay totally money to watch that on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a great one.
All right. Well, it's time for our weekly segment where we talk about the moments that caused us the most emotional distress. Time for the pain train, Brad.
Woo! Everybody, and buckle in. This is where the crippling depression begins.
Yeah.
All aboard.
And definitely for me, the most painful moment in this episode was Rex talking to Echo at the end when you think the trouble is over. And he's like, it'll be just like old times. He just wants everything to be okay. He wants to have his friend back. But I think it's, we can definitely say at this point, this is not going to go the way he thinks.
Yeah, I completely agree. There was that one quiet moment, too, of when Rex tells him that and walks off. We get like a really beautiful zoom-in shot of Echo kind of just standing there mm-hmm. by himself. And there's like this really quiet, soft music playing. And for a moment, you think like, you know, he might be reminiscing, like he's back to his normal self. And like, wow, like how exciting that he gets to like be free. And it makes mm-hmm. me think of earlier in the episode when I think it was Rex tells him, better to feel something than nothing, old buddy. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show that like he truly wasn't feeling anything for so long. He was just part of a machine, part of a program. He was called Techno Union Property by Wat Tambor. So to really everybody else is just, he's just an object for war rather than any sort of sentient being. And now we think he's going to be a sentient being, but there might be more beneath the surface. He still might not have that free will that we've been talking about on the show. And he still might be feeling nothing eventually, but at least for now, he's kind of relishing in it.
I think it's an oversight on Rex's part too, that like, after all that Echo has been through over the past, like, what, 2 years or something? I'm not sure, but he's like, it'll be just like old times. And I'm like, it's not that easy, mm-hmm. you know? Echo's been through a lot. And it's not that simple, just kind of falling back into the old routine. Everything's going to be different now. And they have to figure out how to deal with that one way or another.
I think, too, it could keep Rex's guard up. You know, this could be an event that really destroys any sort of trust he has mm-hmm. with just any other people, which is really devastating. Because I remember when they first meet with Kanan and Rebels, there is some obvious distrust between Kanan and Rex because of the Order 66. So I wonder if the events of this arc do feed into that a little bit of not only did Rex watch all of his clones turn, but then he watched like one guy that he tried to save also turn on him. And it's like, mm-hmm. who do I trust anymore in this galaxy besides possibly just Ahsoka? But even then, I'm pretty sure he thinks Ahsoka's dead by that point. So it's like, really, really paints a very tragic picture of Rex and what he, like, just the complete change that he's about to go through. And this is just one step in that. And again, it goes back to, like, is he going to be really living? Even though he survives, is he living with all this just burden?
Yeah, Rex has always trusted his brothers without question, but then you have stuff like the Umbara arc that happens where they end up being manipulated into killing each other on a pretty large scale. Mm-hmm. And then you have stuff like what happened with Fives, which Rex probably wonders what was going on with Fives. He went totally off the rails. And then you're going to have Echo do something different, but kind of similar in a way. And Rex's view kind of turning against him probably is what's going to happen. And it's just going to start building on, you know, one thing after the other. And he's like, I can't even trust my brothers anymore. And then when Order 66 happens, it's like, what is happening? You know, I can't trust anything. Everything that I thought I knew is just like a weird construct that I, you know, probably feel like a fool now forever believing in. So it's just going to be very hard to see the rest of Rex's journey in this season.
Yeah. Ugh, I'm not ready. I can't believe we have only one episode left in this arc. Are you excited to finish it up? I mean, I definitely am like ready for the next set of stories, but it'll be weird to now get this and then place ourselves in a brand new story like the week after and just be completely done with the Bad Batch, which I'm not ready to say goodbye to all my Bad Batch bros.
Me either.
it's gonna be sad.
Like, I'm ready to see the climax of the arc because I know it's going to be really exciting and not fun unless you're using the J.J. Abrams definition of fun. But it's weird because, like, I'm not ready to say goodbye to the Bad Batch because I really enjoy having them around. But at the same time, I am really ready to move on and see, like, what's going on with Ahsoka and what her journey is going to be like. So it's mixed feelings.
Yeah, it's so crazy to think about. We haven't had any Ahsoka yet. This season.
I know.
We're still waiting. Which people are going to go nuts when she finally appears on screen. It's going to be so exciting to see Ashley Eckstein's voice.
Probably going to cry.
Yeah. And then imagine when we finally get to Maul. Oh,
man.
There's a lot to happen this season. We're not ready.
Yeah. A lot of pain and also fun times to come.
So for all of you aboard the pain train, just know this train ain't stopping for another 8 weeks. So buckle yourselves in. It only gets worse. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
That's so uplifting, Brad.
It's a good Harry Potter Prisoner of Azkaban reference if I've ever heard one.
It's like if we're on the Hogwarts Express in Prisoner of Azkaban, like you just said, because we have the Dementors circling and sucking out our joy. They're bringing the tragedy and the pain.
It's also like the night bus, honestly. We're just getting tossed around in the back.
Oh my gosh.
Like after every left and right turn, they just don't give a crap. They're just going.
Who's the shrunken head?
Huh?
Who's the shrunken head?
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you. Somebody that wants to cause extreme harm to my emotions.
Wait. It's up to interpretation, right?
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, we've made every possible reference under the sun today for different fandoms, including Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, but that is it for our recap on this episode of The Clone Wars, The Wings on the Wings of Kira Dax. And it was a good one. Gotta love
Gotta love Anakin flying in the sky with his lightsaber on the Cara deck. It was a great shot. Great moment.
Yes.
I love them all escaping on those things. And I'm sad we're leaving Skako Minor, but I'm excited to see what planet comes up next in the new episode. I wonder if we're going back to somewhere that we're familiar with, maybe Coruscant to
Coruscant, please.
inspect Echo a little bit more and take him to a laboratory. I don't know if we go back to Kamino. I really don't know what happens next. I'm probably way wrong here, but for all of you who did watch those unfinished episodes, you do know, you have the knowledge. I'm a little jealous, but I'm happy to wait an extra 5 days.
Yes, it's definitely fun to get to experience these, like having no idea what's coming next, yeah. Unless, you know, it's something related to episode 3. I'm just kind of completely in the dark on like where things are going next, and I really enjoy kind of getting to experience those plot twists.
Well, with that, Madison, where can our Last Mission listeners find Doing Talking?
You can find everything on doingtalking.com, and you can also listen on iTunes, Spreaker, and YouTube. My channel is Maddie Solo. And I also have a Twitter, so you can follow me at Doing Talking Pod, and you can follow me at the same username on Facebook and Instagram as well, and Doing Talking also has a Patreon, so if you head on over to patreon.com/doingtalking, you can find all kinds of cool extra content there.
Awesome. And as for here at Friends of the Force, you can find us on Twitter at Friends of Force and Instagram at Friends of the Force. You can also join our Patreon at patreon.com/friendsoftheforce alongside Alderanian Rose, Cheryl, Michael Condon, Neil Lowry, Rachel, Real Farm Boy, and T. So we have a lot of extra content going on there as well. And we are also a part of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network, which aims at promoting positivity in the Star Wars fandom. So with that, folks, there's only one thing left to say.
Begun. The Clone War has.